When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
We are recording. Welcome up to Really Well with Tom and Dave. Hey, Tom.
Hi, Dave.
How are you?
I'm fantastic. I'm great. I can't complain at all.
Yeah. Oh, good. Well, I have this feeling of intestinal invigoration that comes from having possibly just gotten food poisoning.
Okay. Could be a little IBS, little irritable bowel syndrome, possibly.
Or just cantankerous bowel syndrome.
I think
my age is more cantankerous.
Small derivation of this standard. Okay.
Yeah, crotchety. Crotchety bowel syndrome.
Crotchety bowel system is a little new to the medical journals, but is also sounds intriguing and potentially painful.
Yeah, it's the gerontological version. And everything about me is now gerontological.
I want to know either how many listeners we just gained or lost with this tidbit of information.
I'm at that age where the first words out of the doctor's mouth, beginning of every sentence is, well, at your age, it's even things like, you know, oh, it's a nice day out. Well, you know, for someone at your age.
Yeah, no, of course. I get I'm always happy to just hear good news. You don't have whatever I'm afraid I have.
Yeah,
you know, but if the conversation doesn't start with good news, then I'm
I like it when they don't say, "Could you pay your deductible before we finish this session?"
Yeah, I got something. I got some email of something I didn't pay. I don't quite understand how all the medical stuff, you know.
And I'm Canadian, so I'll never understand it.
Somebody should take. I know, particularly as a Canadian, you should be confused.
Yeah,
it's very.
How
are your fluids? I mean, we might as well just finish up on this, you know.
Good. I feel okay. I think a certain amount of food poisoning or stomach flu, I think is an effective stand-in for exercise and diet.
Yeah. No, you could have cool hallucinations.
Yeah.
It could make you sort of in some ways sharper, just more alert to sense your senses. That might be helpful.
Or even if I just want to look nice for an upcoming event, I'll often just eat like a raw chicken.
Some old sushi that you've left on the table overnight or something.
Just to be extra trim for a showbiz event.
Something a little sweaty, perhaps, that didn't quite make it to the fridge or.
Yep.
This is terrible. I'm sorry. I feel that you're not well.
It's good. It's good.
Okay, good. All right. Good. Well, do you have?
All good.
This we're recording this on near or about Halloween.
We are.
Do you partake? Are you going to Halloween? Be anything interesting?
Well, I am.
What's going on in New York? What are your plans? What is Dave Foley doing for Halloween? I want to know.
I think I'm going to do what I often do ever since my daughter became too old to trick or treat, and that is nothing. Nothing at all.
There has to be something cool happen. Someone cool has called you and invited you to something cool that you may or may not be attending.
Nope. No one's invited me to anything.
Oh, this is so depressing.
Maybe I'll go down and sort of sadly walk around the village during the parade.
That's a good way to get mugged and or you know roofied.
More hugged. Especially, hugged. You know, with my career.
You might get the
Halloween parade. Oh my God. I'll get hugged a lot.
You'll be like, this is the best Dave Foley costume I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They'll be all over you.
And you, what are you doing for Halloween?
We're trying to figure out we have our dear friend Isabel, it's her birthday, and so we do have to go, and there will probably be costumes involved because she is a notorious, she tends to dress up in just really aggressively like unattractive, like she's lovely human, lovely looking human, all that, but she goes with some aggressive costume that like tries to gross people out or upset them in some way. So it's always kind of a nice but somewhat awkward celebration of Halloween because she seems to be getting something out of her system. So we're going, that's what we're going to, we're going to attend Isabel's birthday, Halloween, id experience. That'll be good. And then there might be something this weekend,
she'll be dressed as the magistrate from the Nuremberg trial. That's
good. I don't know if it'll go quite that. Yeah. It's, you know, sometimes, I don't know. It's like, usually like there's teeth missing. I don't know. There's some,
We always try
to figure out. It's usually an interesting psychological.
I think for me, the idea of getting dressed up in a costume is never appealing because that's what I used to do for a living.
Yeah, and you still do. By the way, when is Fargo coming out? I'm sure people are eager
November,
to know.
November 21st, I believe, and I think that's all the union will allow me to say.
Okay. Fair. Oh yeah. Right. Shit.
I keep forgetting too. We're so
easy about it now that our strike's over.
But yeah, thanks for the solidarity.
Yeah, there you go. I'm marching.
Yeah,
in my mind.
I have to get out and picket more.
I'm not going to interrogate you about your marching, but I suspect you may have missed a day or two.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we don't have to dwell on union deals.
I guess we should dwell on UFOs and that sort of thing.
We can because we are on the other side of our fantastic George Knapp series.
Yes.
I just want to first of all, I mean, what were your thoughts after that crazy wild Vegas weekend with George?
I kept thinking, oh my God, I've never had the chance to hear the whole George Knapp story in sort of laid out in a linear fashion and at such length. I'm not sure that George was anticipating so much length. But
we totally took George Knapp hostage, everyone. He didn't know what he was in the hotel room and just not allowed to leave.
Because he was with us for about 4 hours.
I think he was with us for like eight.
No.
I mean, he got... No. Yes. That,
no. He got...
Yes.
He got
Your pee breaks were 2 hours.
He was
Come on.
Late.
He was there. We were there. I took some too. But this man... All right. At least six. I'll go six, but I'm not going any less. We had him there for a long time.
Yeah. And he brought tons of documentation of amazing... Like, you know, we had DIRDS, and I forget what D-I-R-D stands for.
DIRDS.
But it's like it was basically the stuff, the papers that were laid out as to what the plans were for OSAP when they were starting.
Yeah, yeah.
He had confidential documents from Russia that he brought back.
I found the Russia stuff. I had heard, you know, some of that with Weaponized with Jeremy, but I just found that stuff incredible. I just found it so interesting that like disclosure happening during Glasnost makes so much sense because of the transparency and the sort of the walls, like both literal and figurative, kind of coming down, and that would be a moment where they would start to, you know, talk about this stuff. And yeah, I found that to be really compelling. And again, kind of absurdly underreported through no fault of George's.
The UFO subject is the cone of silence. When it comes to media, but he did. I know at the time that he did that. He produced a series. He did a series called UFOs: The Best Evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the early 90s. And one of those episodes I remember was about the Russia trip. So I remember watching it back then.
Yeah. And I listen, and I'm sure, you know, and I'm sure it got a lot of attention then, like with a lot of this stuff, people kind of turn to their next thing and it kind of goes in the, yeah. you know, the background. Well, and
it's like now it got a lot of attention from people who care about the subject and zero attention from people who insist that it's all nonsense.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think the same machinery is in effect. One of my takeaways from meeting him was, I mean, not just his sort of, seriously, his generosity of time was yes. incredible. And the fact that he was willing to put up with our nonsense for, you know, however many hours, but it was a long time. And it was very sweet of him to bring that stuff. And you know, really cool to get a window into his history. And I agree, like the timeline of it all is, I mean, he has been central to it all and with every yeah. kind of major player. And at the same time, he has this humility and kind of, I get this sense of, you know, just someone rolling this fucking boulder up this hill for, you know, 40 years and, yeah. and the number of times that people have said something to him and then refuse to say it again, or, yeah. you know, will refuse to go public, or
yeah.
cancel
meetings and
yeah, this Sisyphean experience of, and then even what he was talking about in terms of the New York Times article and the way he kind of took one for the team because it was coming out in the New York Times was such a sort of, it wasn't about him. It yeah. was about the phenomenon and sort of fighting for disclosure all these years. And I thought that was so
yeah.
kind of selfless and interesting.
Be more clear about that. Yeah. That we're talking about the 2017 yeah. New York Times article by Leslie Kane and Ralph Blumenthal.
Mm-hmm.
But that the story they broke was largely a story that George knew about, like he in great detail.
In fact, years.
George knew about the OSAP when it was started. When it was founded and knew it all the way, you know, and had would get information all the way through its tenure.
Yeah. And you know? And just for those who, cause I'd love for this, our episode today to kind of sort of re-welcome in the newbies, re-welcome in anyone who's kind of just checking out UFO stuff. And we can kind of go over, you know, I would love it to be a little bit of a primer and just to kind of
yeah.
give people it's a window into this.
It's easy to get dragged into, you know, like I guess what you call inside baseball kind of, which when I watch Inside Baseball, I get confused and bored because I don't watch baseball. So it doesn't make any sense to me. So people, yeah, it's easy to get dragged into all of the names and the various camps and
yes,
the,
and the acronyms rivalries and rivalries. Yeah. It's true. I mean, I remember my first just even starting to talk with you about it, you know, and now it's only, I don't know, how deep are we in on this thing? To 8 months? I'm not sure, but
I can't, how many episodes have we done? I don't
know. I think it's, we're getting up there.
Clearly neither of us watches the
high teens. I check in every now and again on some of my favorite conversations, yep. but I was overwhelmed completely by the number of sort of experts and how to keep track of acronyms and programs yeah. like that. And even just now we were talking about OSAP. And I guess one way to think of that is just like this huge overarching UFO research that took place funded by the government over the course of, you know, several mm-hmm. years that was
yes.
kind of yeah. very impactful and very secret for a good long while.
Yeah. And it was the program that had the $22 million budget that was mentioned in the New York Times.
Funded by Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader of the yeah. Senate, who was also a Vegas person who knew George Knapp for years. George is sort of the OG original investigator of this phenomenon. And we know of Area 51.
He was the connective tissue between
everything, all of
like
it.
Rob, you know, he was the one who he sort of introduced Harry Reid to the folks at Skinwalker that were doing
right.
the
Skinwalker
NIDS,
Ranch,
the, NIDS,
the famous history yeah, the, show or whatever it's on.
Yeah, the was it the NIDS National Institute for Discovery Science program mm-hmm. that was run by Robert Bigelow and with and what's his what Oh, who is Nicole Kelleher was involved with that?
And James Lekatsky.
Yeah, so he set those people up, and so Harry Reid heard about that through them, and then that got him interested, and he got James Lekatsky to set up OSAP, mm-hmm. which later spawned ATIP, which was run by Lou Elizondo, who was featured prominently in the New York Times article in 2017.
So if you're just joining us, the UFO phenomenon is being actively researched by your government. Whatever you may think of this topic or subject matter, or how skeptical you are, or a believer you are, what's important to note is that the media's attention aside, your government is paying very close attention. Now, it doesn't always want to tell you that it's paying very close attention.
No, it wants to behave like it's doing the opposite.
It wants to sort of kind of push it aside, but it is actively involved. And in fact, there is a new book that actually we were talking about with George Knapp that he wrote with two of the folks that Dave was just talking about, Colm Kelleher and James Lekatsky. James Lekatsky is a physicist for the Defense Intelligence Agency. Yes.
And rocket scientist as well.
And a rocket scientist. And this book is entitled Inside the U.S. Government Covert UFO Program, called Initial Revelations. And it's a sequel to a book they wrote, all three of these gentlemen, because George Knapp is also an author, that was called Skinwalkers at the Pentagon. Now, one might think that this is the kind of thing like, oh, okay, it's a UFO book. Somebody, you know, you might find it in the New Age section, and you might find it in the New Age section. But what I find so interesting about where we are in this conversation now and with this phenomenon, do you know who published this book, Dave? I know you do, but I'm...
Larry Flint?
You might think Larry Flint could have published...
Well,
inside
dead.
The
he's
U.S.
dead,
government.
He?
Yeah. Yeah. Who? No, I think he has passed on.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if he is, you know, he's soon to not be any longer alive.
But his DNA is everywhere he ever passed.
Everywhere. It's, oh my God, what happened? Where did we just go? Stop
all
it.
Right, but, all right. All right. But who published this crazy UFO book?
I'm glad you asked that, Dave, because it's actually published.
News of the World?
Not News of the World, not Weekly World News. The Defense Department of our very own U.S. government, the Defense Department published this book.
Which is, I didn't even know they published books.
I didn't know they published books, and I didn't know they published UFO books. But this is their program they paid for, and they put it through 12 months of scrutiny.
Of the DOPSER process.
The DOPSER process, which is like we're scanning this for classified info, and we're going to take it out. And yet, we are still stuck with like this book, and I'm about halfway through, but it is, I mean, it's covering all the UFO stuff they studied and cases and injuries to human beings and attacks on indigenous people in Brazil, on an island in Brazil, and cases of human UAP contact, of damage to people, and the study of these discs and how they respond. To me, this is where we are. Your government is publishing books essentially UFO disclosure. And I haven't even gotten to the bit where they talk about the fucking like ship that they walked in.
Well, that's the amazing thing, which George told us when we were talking to him in Vegas, and also George and Jeremy Corbell on their fantastic Weaponized podcast, which everyone should watch.
You should both like and subscribe Weaponized.
Yeah.
And you should like and subscribe to with Tom and Dave at YouTube, because we always forget to say that.
Yeah.
And
you forget. Like, subscribe to it. Write a review. And, you know,
ask us questions.
Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Follow us on the social medias.
Those Instagrams, we've always got good shit there. There's stuff on, there should be stuff everywhere on TikTok and whatever. And we're also available wherever fine podcasts are available. But you got to like us and subscribe. And we'd love to sort of have a dialogue. Tell us what you like, what you don't like, less what you don't like. If you want to go after Dave, that's fine. Me, I'm a little sensitive, so I would keep me out of it.
Nails.
Yeah, he's got an incredible like Teflon skin. I'm, you know, very sensitive. It'll keep me up nights. But we do want to hear what you think. And then we'll happily sort of, you know, we'll gear towards that. I'm all for audience participation.
Yes. But now,
but sorry, I cut you off. Yes.
No, I was just saying on the Weaponized podcast this last week, George and Jeremy had Colm Kelleher and James Lakatsky on as guests, which is a very rare event. Those guys, you know, especially James Lakatsky, does not do a lot of interviews.
And he's a serious intelligence officer type.
Yeah, but they discussed on there, and Jeremy kept trying to push Lakatsky to go further. But basically, the book that you have in your hands is the account as far as Lakatsky and Kelleher can tell it without going to jail. So they very finely crafted every statement in there to go exactly as far as they could go. And so in the interview, of course, George and Jeremy very valiantly were trying to get them to go a little further. Mm-hmm. And they steadfastly stuck to, we can tell you exactly what we said in the book, but mm-hmm. we can't go beyond it. But what he said in the book, which is that that at least one incident that Lakatsky can verify and Colm Kelleher can verify of the U.S. government having possession of a UFO, of a flying saucer, and that they were able to breach the interior of the flying saucer and examine it, and that they found that it had no engines that they could discern, no means of propulsion, no flight surfaces, no welds, no rivets, no, you know, no indications of manufacture that they could understand.
Yeah. How's this thing work?
And that they got, and that people got inside this thing and were able to examine it. So that's again, another top high ranking intelligence official, along with David Grush and along with was his name Martin Nell, who confirmed Grush, and about 30 other people who have also corroborated Grush in private testimony to the ICIG and Congress. So this is just one more voice, one more very, very credible voice saying that UFOs exist. We have retrieved them.
Yeah.
We are studying them. And it's this is not this is not just some crazy story.
And I think meaningfully he did not as some parties have tried to kind of distance from Grush or whatever. He was in his fashion, because this guy was completely sort of a squirrely interview. Oh my lord. You know, he was ducking and dodging all over the place, but he didn't dismiss Grush at all. And he was like, yeah, sounds pretty credible to me. And he was saying, you know, and I vouched for Jay Stratton, who was the, you know, super like admiral level intelligence guy at the Defense Intelligence Agency, who had kind of in great anonymity sort of been a part of all of these programs over the past 20 years.
He's the Zelig of UFOs.
He is the Zelig. He was always there and never identified. But this is not to sort of inside baseball anyone. It's more to just be like, if you almost from my part of getting frustrated that things aren't happening faster, or it seems like there are step backs, or it seems like, they're doing their old tricks again, or they're doing their old Project Blue Book shit with this Arrow program, which is clearly just sort of a PR thing to keep the media off the main trail. We still have this rolling disclosure happening at a level and pace unprecedented in the history of mankind of revelation after revelation from the highest levels of the intelligence world that we've got stuff. We've got stuff.
We have machines.
We have stuff from other places that are not ours.
And machines and biologics.
And biologics. And we have legislation. Laws are being written now. There's two or three that have gone into the defense budget. Yeah.
Yeah.
Over the past 2 years that are meaningful pieces of legislation directly related to UAP phenomenon.
Yeah.
Why would that be happening?
I know.
Why would they be wasting their time?
Because it was like 2 years ago they wrote the whistleblower legislation, right? Was it a year or 2 years? I think it was 2 years ago.
So
that was the first. That was the first big legislation that came out of the revelations following the 2017 New York Times article.
Yeah,
and the release of the Tic Tac video and the Gimbal video and the Go Fast video. Those are the three videos, and I'm still astonished that so many people don't know those videos exist. To me, it's like, you know,
yeah, and we talk about them like ba-ka-joon. They're very meaningful, sort of in the mythological canon of all of this. But they're not myths.
Like, yeah, to me, it's like you've never heard of Sergeant Pepper's.
I know. These are the greatest hits. These are the UAP greatest hits.
Yeah, but yeah, those videos. If you haven't seen them, they're easy to find. Mm-hmm. Just look them up on the New York Times.
Just look up Tic Tac. It's a 2004 grainy video, although it is very clear that there is much better footage of it that is being kept from us, that we are told. But it was taken by essentially Top Gun pilots, kind of the most reliable, the most reliable witnesses you can probably find on Earth.
Well, there were, I guess, four F-18s went out. One with one piloted by David Fravor, the other piloted by Alex Dietrich, were the first two that went out. And
remind me, Dave, was this off Catalina or was it off San Diego?
I guess it was off San Diego.
I think it was in San Diego, and it was a phenomenon that was not just observed by these two pilots, but was observed multiple times by multiple pilots and by an entire radar ship.
Yeah, multiple radar systems, airborne radar systems, shipborne on the Princeton, I think, was their radar ship accompanying the USS Nimitz. Mm-hmm. So you had two pilots, and in each plane you have two aviators. You have their mm-hmm. weapon systems, or WISO, the WIS weapon systems operators behind them.
Nice.
And so you had those two, and then two other jets went out. I think it was two other ones. Maybe it was, I think it's usually two go out, but piloted by Chad Underwood, who captured the actual forward looking infrared mm-hmm. footage on the FLIR footage of the Tic Tac and tried to lock on it. And he's the one who had his radar jammed by the Tic Tac, mm-hmm. Which is a pretty sophisticated technology to jam the radar on a F-18 fighter jet.
I think one of the most notable things, there's a few things, and we talk about this in our Jeremy Corbell interview, one of our first episodes. We talk about the Tic Tac with Jeremy, and when they first came upon it, it looked like they thought a plane had crashed, right? Because it appeared something was under the water of size, like that the maybe 747 size, something under the water bubbling. Yeah. And then this smaller white object, which is Tic Tac shaped and colored, began to sort of respond to the planes and being seen and flew around these planes with impunity in our most secure airspace that exists. Vital technology.
David Fair, who was the pilot, who is the commander of the Black Aces unit, which was like the top there.
That sounds good. That sounds like badass.
It's the closest you get to Maverick, you know, to Tom Cruise in real life.
Yes.
You know, and he's not just, you know, a Top Gun pilot. He's the commander of all the other Top Gun pilots on the USS Nimitz. He's the highest ranked officer amongst that group. And so he's the one who, and again, Alex Dietrich, she's flying she's his wingman flying the other F-18. And she stays at height. I think she stays up around 20,000 feet in elevation and circles like observing. So she's got like a, what they call a God's eye view of it. And Fravor decides he's going to engage. He basically says, I'm going in. And so he dives down towards it because it's down just above sea level. And he dives down towards it and it starts matching all of his movements, starts mirroring him. So as he's going along, it's like going along the other way and like, you know, kind of countering him. So he decides to cut across the circle, I guess, to cut it off. And when he does, it quickly adjusts and flips towards him and then just disappears like a bullet. And he says it's just disappeared and was gone. So you got all of them. So you've got four experts.
Where did it go?
Well, in about a minute later, I think it was, they got a report that it had showed up at their cap point, which is like a rendezvous point for the mission. That is a top secret location, top secret altitude and grid point on the map. It showed up there like a minute later, which was 60 miles away.
Yeah, it's like this otherworldly kind of you know, sort of playful fuck you to to our entire military, you know, institution. Yeah. It's in secure airspace and bouncing around. And if anyone tries to convince that was China or Russia, first of all, I think what's happening in Ukraine will dispel any I thought that this is possibly Russia.
Yeah,
and I think it's unlikely, to say the least, that China's been keeping this a secret. This was a no propulsion, no visible means of keeping itself aloft, no sound, no vapor trail, no anything. And kind of like, this is like sort of the modern day Roswell, right? I mean, it's become that sort of ingrained as like, Tic Tac is sort of like,
it's the most important, I think the most important sighting for many reasons. One is just the level of documentation that's on it and the incredible credibility of the, you know, six, you know, witnesses that, I know.
Yeah. Check out 60 Minutes Tic Tac if you're interested in some, you know, really,
you can see Fravor and Alex Dietrich interviewed on that. And then, and it's like the objects were being caught on radar for like a week before this, but, you know, but they were busy, so they didn't go and check it out. You know, but for like a week before this, they were getting these radar trackings of objects coming in from above 80,000 feet, which is essentially above that. Pretty much the next thing, next stop is space. And nothing flies that high. We don't have anything that flies above that height. Even the spy planes don't go up above that. So they were dropping down from 80,000 feet. Just above sea level, like a foot above sea level in under a second.
That's fast. It sounds fast to me.
Yes. It's many, 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 many times the speed of sound. I think there's something like 30, Mach 30 or something.
Okay.
He was traveling at. And so they're seeing this and they're going, well, that's not possible. And it's going on for quite a while. And they're seeing dozens of these things. And so eventually, so finally they have a little gap in the train. They say, well, I think they use the term, let's vector some pilots out there. I like, you know,
I'm liking your terminology. It's sexy.
Yeah. And so they call up, David Fravor and, say we have a real world. I think real world vectoring or something.
They were on a training mission. So they didn't have weapons on their plane at the time.
No, they didn't have weapons. They weren't even wearing pants because it was just a training mission. Very loose rules on those.
It's because it keeps them a feeling of vulnerability.
Yeah,
that should be maintained when you're up there. You know.
But so they they're told we're switching you to a real world mission. You know, and they're going, maybe they're going to use this to run down some drug smugglers.
Yeah,
what they were thinking. You know, but then when they arrive, they see this white cross under the water of turbulent water and this thing buzzing around above it. And, you know, and as David Fravor testified in front of Congress under oath, you know, he said that this was not something we had then. It's not something we have now. It's not something we're likely to have in 10 or 20 years. And as he described it, he said this was something beyond our material science. Because not only, but like the inertial forces, not only would, if anyone was inside this craft, they would have been turned to soup. But the anything we know of, just the craft itself would have been torn to shreds. It would have been torn to shreds or melted through from the friction of the air of our atmosphere. The speeds that it was moving at would have incinerated it. Anything moving that fast within the atmosphere would have so much friction from molecules of air that it would burn up.
So for the dubious at home, perhaps there are some dubious people, and that's fine, and it's good to be a questioning human. A couple things. One, this is a completely documented, confirmed by the Department of Defense and by the Navy that this was an object in space that we're talking about. This is not, yes. This was not a glitch on the radar. This was an actual object in space interacting with our aircraft. Yes. And then just as amazingly, the head of essentially the top gun, the top pilot on Earth, essentially the guy who runs, you know, the Tom Cruise camp of Top Gun testified under oath to Congress that this was not something we have or will have any time.
And no one else has it.
Epoch, and nobody else has it. So,
yeah. And he also said very clearly, and if this was aggressive, we would be absolutely powerless to defend against it.
And, right. And, you know, and this is said, one of thousands.
Yeah, if another nation, yeah. And if another nation gets hold of this technology and is able to develop it, reverse engineer it, we will be completely vulnerable to whatever nation gets that technology.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think this is a Russian, and remember this happened in 2004.
Yeah.
And it's not like the military, they may not have talked about it. They may not have talked about it to any of the people who witnessed it, but it was investigated. It was investigated by OSAP. In fact, so it was investigated by the military, and from 2004, they tried to figure it out, and they still haven't. No one has figured out, no one has explained in any mundane way what that Tic Tac was and how it was capable of doing the things it could do. So the people who go, oh, it's top secret
US. It's a balloon.
Or it's top secret US program. It's not, because I don't know how many times like fighter pilots have to come forward and say, no, we don't do that. We don't test top secret programs in a training area for our fighters.
That would make sense because they would want to kill it and destroy it or be killed and destroyed.
Yeah, they would. Yeah, they would. It would be risking killing our own soldiers trying to defend against it or destroying whatever this incredibly great new product is.
Mm-hmm.
So they said it's just, it never happens. That's not how the military works. They have places to test top secret stuff, and that's where they do it. They do it all the time. And occasionally, if something gets seen by a regular forces, they have a debriefing program, and basically their people are told, you know, roughly what they've seen and that they should keep quiet about it. But it's, you know, there's protocols and there's processes that people go through if it is an actual black project, a top secret bit of technology. And the other thing to consider is people say, well, there's all these, like the stealth bomber, we didn't know about that for years. But every single top secret bit of technology that's come along has always been, especially in, as aircraft go, has always been nothing more than an incremental improvement on previous aircraft.
Yeah.
And in fact, there's nothing flying in our arsenal or any other arsenal on the planet that fundamentally diverges from what the Wright brothers flew.
Sure.
We're still doing exactly what the Wright brothers did, you know, creating lift through,
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
By having, you know, a difference in pressure above and below the wing through an airfoil, mm-hmm. with a certain amount of propulsion. You need propulsion and you need lift. So you need lifting surfaces. So the stealth bomber, the U-2 spy plane, all are basically fundamentally exactly the same thing that the Wright brothers flew.
I myself need to remind myself, it's easy, like we get into this and we start like thinking about, oh, well, there was this just thing that happened on Twitter or X or whatever, so-and-so said something, or some congressperson became frustrated, or some, you know, meeting didn't happen. If you're following this stuff on a daily, hourly basis, it's easy to kind of get lost in the weeds of all of this. And it's important to both remind myself, ourselves, it's important to remind the audience and anyone new to this, that if you go and look into the Tic Tac event, it is the modern day Roswell. It's sort of where it is a good ground zero. You could pick a few, but it's a good ground zero to start with, because from the Tic Tac, you then had some heavily funded UFO investigative programs take place, and you essentially then have this, and these were all happening very secretly, and then it was all kind of given public light, you know, through this 2017 New York Times article, and now what we're dealing with, you know, call us crazy, but we're not making this shit up. This is all happening right now. The government feels like there's some kind of like Swiss cheese effort to kind of sort of keep some of it back, while there is also very concerted efforts to drag out this information to light, because it seems to go much deeper than Tic Tac. And it seems to now be very fundamentally about whether or not the government is keeping UFOs, saucers, you know, secret from us, and programs that are secret access programs that have probably been around 50 years that seem to be extremely difficult to find.
Yeah, and are likely illegally funded.
Well, yeah, because these black budgets, you know, you've got what they were talking about, $30 billion unaccounted for a lot of these things that they just kind of disappear into this network of covert programs, military programs, a lot of contractors getting very, very rich.
Yeah.
These bloated defense programs and not a lot of oversight. You know, the oversight efforts are kind of laughable.
Yeah.
And it would be easy. Let's just be clear. Like because I have to remind myself, like, I'm like, how the fuck? I mean, after all this, how the fuck do they keep this secret? Like, if there's something in a garage and a hangar and some Air Force base or some lot, like, how do they keep the secret? And then you just think about, like, where does, like, the money just disappears into these. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. People confuse the government with the military.
What do you mean?
Well, people always say, well, the government can't keep secrets there. Everything leaks from the government. And that's not true of the military. They keep secrets really well. They keep secrets for forever. And, you know, because they're scary. You know,
well, they want their shit and they don't want to tell. And there's only a few like liaisons to Congress, right? I mean, there's only a few committees, few people that get to talk, right? Like head to head with them. Otherwise, they're separate, just sort of seemingly separate branches.
One of the things we're finding out from Grush is that there is essentially no oversight of of a lot of what's going on at all, because they've been subverting oversight. That's one of the aspects of his whistleblower complaint, is that there is an illegal obstruction of oversight, and that you know, when everything comes to light, there's a good chance that there's a lot of people who will go to jail for very long periods of time for crimes they've committed to keep these things secret. You know, and you also, you know that first off, there's just a code within the military. People follow orders. People maintain their secrecy. So military can keep things secret pretty well. And then, of course, on top of that, you have to also point out that that even then, it really hasn't been kept a perfect secret because we all know about all of this.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like so much stuff is actually leaking out. And again, like, call us fucking crazy. We're not the ones that wrote whistleblower legislation. Obviously, Congress felt compelled to write legislation, not for just all whistleblowers, not for just any military whistleblower. They wrote legislation specifically for UFO whistleblowers because they found it credible enough and important enough to make it illegal to for reprisals on people that want to say, and then we're keeping secrets and UFOs in hangars somewhere.
Then you got Chuck Moon Age Daydream Schumer, flaky legislation.
Yeah, flaky old Chuck Schumer, majority leader of the Senate. Right, go on.
So he's writing legislation that that will, if it passes, and it looks like it's going to, and he's written it with, I guess, five other senators, bipartisan support.
Marco Rubio, Kristen Gillibrand, et cetera, and so forth.
So, and it states that in its cover page that the American people have a right to know the truth about non-human intelligences.
Yeah,
that's what, and then it says that on the cover page.
And it proceeds to say non-human intelligences, I think, about 17 times.
I think 24 times, yeah. And so, invokes eminent domain, which is the government's power to take property from citizens and corporations, it says, of any materials and biologics pertaining to non-human intelligence.
So, Dave, are you making that up?
No, I'm not making it up.
Are you making that up? Are you making it up that Chuck Schumer is writing UFO legislation about bodies and about non-human intelligence and ships kept in secret places?
Yes.
So you're not making that up. That actually happened.
Yes. It's
legislation. I just want to clarify. Like, we're not the fucking crazy people. This is crazy times. We're not crazy.
No.
If you're dubious out there, like, this is actually underway.
Yeah.
Chuck Schumer had a little press conference.
Arguably, not paying attention to this is crazy.
Yeah, I mean,
at least
I got other shit I could do.
I would say not paying attention to the UFO issue is a kind of pathology. And it's not an accidental pathology. It's a pathology that's been finely nurtured and architected by the U.S. Intelligence and military forces.
Let me ask you another question. Why would Chuck Schumer waste his time? Which I assume is pretty valuable. There's a lot of neediness in the government, right? Like, there's lots of So why would he waste his time writing UFO legislation for the defense budget?
Obviously, it's because Republicans and Democrats love getting together and cooperating on legislation.
Yes,
it's just something they do for fun every now and again.
It just happens all the time.
Let's come up with some unanimous legislation.
Yeah.
That we can all vote for, just because it feels so good to agree on everything.
At a time when democracy is on the line, when we can't even agree on democracy or elections.
When we
can't agree on basic.
We can't agree that the president is the president.
The most basic institutions are in question because the parties are that in such a hateful death spin. And yet, what brings them and unites them is this issue.
Yes, the urgent issue of UFOs.
Of fucking visitors from somewhere in our atmosphere, and their technology is around us and fucking with our military. So.
Yes. And dwarfs anything we're capable of technologically.
Yeah.
As a human species.
It is important to realize that the Tic Tac is not an isolated event. There are thousands of these events that have taken place around our military, and hundreds of witnesses to UFOs around our nuclear sites. And they seem to have, and I guess if you think about it, I mean, if you think about another civilization or if you think about another race, you know, they'd be curious about that shit. Like, they wouldn't necessarily want to check in on, like, you know, catch up on friends or, you know, no offense, kids in the hall. They're just, you know, they're going to want to look at our nuclear secrets.
Well, and here's the thing. Yeah, there's that, at least going back to the 1940s, there's been a clear connection between UFOs and nuclear energy, nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
And which is maybe, that's a good time to expand a little bit on kind of the you know, one of the great events of modern UFO lore, which is Roswell, because a lot of people maybe watched the TV show Roswell, and certainly a lot of people have heard about Roswell, this sort of kitschy town with their, you know, funky little museums and
they probably have some gift shops by now,
you know. And yeah, and it's, and I think the notion of Roswell as this kitschy little hick town, that's, you know, making a lot of money off of this UFO silliness with, you know, the green skinned alien faces in all the windows of all the shops, but that image is false, because the 509th Bomber Group is stationed outside, or was stationed outside of Roswell. It was the first nuclear bomber wing in the world. At the time, it was the only nuclear bomber wing in the world. It's where the Enola Gay was parked after dropping the weapons on Japan, after dropping the nuclear bomb on Japan. And it was, so at the time, the base, the 509th, was the most important military site on the planet. It was the most secure military site on the planet. Also, probably one of the most spied upon military sites on the planet by the Russians, by Soviets. They had, you know, so they were trying to find out what was going on there because they were trying to, you know, get intelligence to build their own bomb. So when something crashed near the most important military site on the planet, they sent out the man in charge of security for the most important military site on the planet. Guy named Jesse Marcel. They sent him out.
You don't send out, like, the guy that goes gets coffee, right?
You know,
like,
yeah,
when
you
something out, yeah, crashes.
You know, hey, yeah, they don't get Gomer Pyle.
They don't get Gomer. They don't find some schmuck. You know, they're going to pick a pretty important person to go look at this crash, correct?
Yeah, they pick the man whose job it is to make sure that the site of the only nuclear bombs on the planet, that military wing, that flight wing, that those planes that are there equipped and ready to drop more nuclear bombs.
Yeah.
It wasn't like we dropped him on Japan and said, well, all done with that.
No, this is some heavy-duty cold war times.
Yeah. And so they sent out Jesse Marcel, who was in charge of security for the base.
He sounds important.
Very important. Very trained man. He was also involved with orchestrating the bomb testing at Bikini Atoll. And very important. And even after the Roswell incident, got promotions, by the way. So you got to bear that in mind.
I might understand. I might know why.
Yeah. But at the time, so he goes out and he picks up some stuff. He sees a huge debris field. He said it's just a gigantic debris field, as he later described it when he was free to do so. And he picks up some stuff that he actually takes home to his family and shows it to his kid, Jesse Marcel Jr., and, you know, shows him this. You know, as he reports, he showed some this sort of foil-like metallic material that no matter what you do, if you crumpled it up, it immediately expands back out into its former shape.
Batman shit.
That you can't drive a nail through it. You can't burn it with a torch. You can't do anything to damage it. It's impervious to anything.
Okay.
A metal I-beam that you couldn't dent or damage, that weighed absolutely nothing, with some kind of hieroglyphics on it. So he had all this material that he showed to his
family. He had shit with hieroglyphics on it?
Yeah. Yeah, there was a famous an I-beam that had some sort of hieroglyphics on it. But he said it was some form of metal, but it was way stronger than steel, and it weighed absolutely nothing. And so he has this material, and he goes back to his base, and he reports what he has seen. And he reports that there is a downed flying saucer in this field, and there's a huge debris field. And
obviously in his job, he would have no idea what ships look like or planes or anything.
No.
Because he has such an unimportant job that he would not be at all capable of being able to sit, you know, identify something as a disc versus a airplane versus a boat versus whatever, anything that fell out of the sky, or perhaps, and I'm sure you'll get to this, a balloon.
Yes.
So
So he gets back and he reports that he has seen a debris field of a flying saucer. And I believe his
that was sarcasm, by the way. I don't know if you know what that shit is.
Oh, I have a famous sketch about it.
That's true. Look who I'm talking
but
to.
And then I guess an officer above him, I forget his name now, but decides to proudly. Because at this point, you know, flying saucers are in the public mind. Mm-hmm. Ever since Kenneth Arnold saw like six boomerang shaped objects flying over Mount Rainier just a few months earlier, so everyone's talking about flying saucers. So his commanding officer is very proud that they have one. And again, at this point, no one knows where the flying saucer, they might be Russian at this point. No one really knows. But he reports that they've got a downed flying saucer. He's proud of it. They call the local newspaper. The radio station announces it. It's in the headlines. You know, people, who, you know, you can look up those, that the newspaper headlines from that day from Roswell. And it's the next day is it Roger General Ramey, who is the commander of that base, he decides to change the story and says that no, it was a mistaken identity. What they actually found was a downed weather balloon.
Those fucking weather balloons, man.
And they brought the press in, and he forced Jesse Marcel to pose with debris from a weather balloon, like foil paper.
Remember those promotions that he got, rubber. Right?
Yep. So there's a picture of him posing, basically looking up at the camera like this.
Yeah. Silly him. Silly him.
So what would normally happen, I think, is if the head of security for the most important military base in the world misidentified a weather balloon as a flying saucer, normally he would lose his rank. Probably. Mm-hmm. He would probably be disciplined. He would probably, he might go all the way down to being a lowly enlisted man again. Mm-hmm. But what happened instead was he later got promoted. Mm-hmm. Like, why would you promote that idiot who couldn't tell a weather balloon from a spaceship?
I'm curious of what the hieroglyphics are doing on the weather balloon. Do we have a need for hieroglyphics on weather balloons? I don't.
Well, you know, everyone, they like to do Egyptian themed, you know, like the Egyptian theater in Hollywood, you know,
people lands in Cairo.
Everyone loved King Tut.
Yeah.
In those days.
Sure. It would have been fun to put something together. Was that Yul Brynner's time? I don't know. But,
they claim it's a weather balloon. They claim that their head of security is incapable of determining the difference between a flying saucer and a weather balloon, and still they give him promotions, and also they close off the entire, they cordon off the entire area with trucks, and they
because weather balloons are terribly scary.
Yeah. They go around, they tell all the civilians to get out of there and not to talk about this, and you didn't see anything, and stay clear of this, and they threaten, you know, dozens and dozens of civilians reported being threatened by the military and told to shut up, and they never saw anything.
Yeah, because weather balloons are fucking scary as shit. And it's like, if people got to know, that shouldn't know where their rain is being detected from.
Yes. And again, huge crew of military sent in to very secretly pick up all of this debris. And apparently weather balloons aren't that uncommon on military bases.
No, they probably launch a few.
To monitor what's it called? Weather.
So there's a chance. There's a chance this man, our security friend, would be able to identify a weather balloon.
Yes, and traditionally, what you do when one comes down is like a guy in a pickup truck goes and gets it.
You don't have the flatbeds and squads of military and threats,
and you don't fly at all secret under top secret coverage to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, or back then it was just called Wright. Was it just Wright Air Force Base?
I'm not sure when Patterson came into the whole thing. That's a little above my pay grade.
Yeah, this is before it was Wright-Patterson. But that's what they sent. So all of this debris gets sent to Wright-Patterson, which in coming years would become the home of Project Blue Book. And then many, many years later, be the congressional district of, what's his name?
Mike Turner. Congressman from Ohio, who
was pushing against disclosure.
I'm sure... totally coincidentally, absolutely coincidentally, seems to have decided that Grush's testimony is not worth hearing just because it's kind of hearsay and just people told him shit, and we should really stop listening to David Grush and generally not pass any UFO legislation because it might embarrass the Defense Department.
Yeah, DOD. And the other thing we should also remember about Jesse Marcel is that years later, when he was retired from the military after a very successful career, he did a pretty extensive interview for the show In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy.
Love that.
And in which he's on camera interviewed and very clearly states that, what came down in, the weather balloon was a cover story, that it was not a weather balloon. And he clearly states it was not from this planet. He said it was not human technology that he saw and that they recovered. So that man came out and told the truth about it towards the end of, as he was an older man. And, there's video of him telling his story. And there's no reason to disbelieve him. There's no advantage to him.
There's no incentive for so much of this disclosure mm-hmm. involves people taking unbelievable risks, certainly to their kind of personal integrity, their credibility, their careers. There is so little fucking incentive for people to come forward. It's only bad shit that happens. It's just like you put yourself in a target site, especially in the government. Mm-hmm. There's no upside
because you also have a guy named Philip Corso, who had a really stellar military career as an intelligence officer. And he was part of Eisenhower's National Security Council. He was a liaison with the Vatican during the 40s, trying to stop what they called the rat lines, which were the networks trying to smuggle Nazi war criminals out of Europe. So he was a liaison to the priest at the Vatican who was helping to investigate this, who later became the Pope, Pope Paul the VI, I think it was.
Script.
Yeah, and note, then note Corso. Yeah, and of course, and then so then after that, and Corso was also involved with the Korean War, trying to monitor and assess numbers of American and ally prisoners of war in Korea.
Okay,
and determine the conditions of those pilots. That was his job during the Korean War, and so then in
this guy's the real deal. He's a serious fellow.
Yeah, and then they in the '60s, it was what's his name, General Trudeau, who gave him a job of He gave him this filing cabinet. Said, "Yeah, we're going to send this filing cabinet over. You open it up, have a look at it, and see what you think of it." And he gets this filing cabinet. It's full of a lot of weird objects, like some things that look sort of like wires and stuff, and little sort of chips and stuff. And he's given the job. Basically, this was debris from Roswell, he was told, and that his job was to try to figure out what some of this stuff might be, and try to funnel it to people who might be doing research on similar things. And so that's his story. And again, a guy with an incredibly long and storied career in the military, had great, the highest possible clearances and was...
And what is his book?
Trusted. It's called The Day After Roswell.
Philip Corso, and I think you said this earlier, either off, you know, before the pot or what, but he's like the modern, he was sort of the David Grush of his day, correct?
Yeah. And again, it was, he waited again till near the end of his life. Actually, the year after the book was released, he died of a heart attack. A lot of people in the UFO world seem to die of heart attacks shortly after they get too loud.
We don't count, right? We're not experts enough, right?
Mm-mm, no. Okay, yeah. Good. We're going down way after Knapp and Corbell. Yeah.
Exactly. They're the canaries in the coal mine.
Yeah. So they
follow their trail. Yeah.
So he published this book and basically just said it's time everyone knew the truth about it. That he was read in on this and that was his job. He said we had stuff that looked kind of like there were these wire things. They were kind of like, but we found that if you shine a light on them, the light comes out the other end. And then he heard people working on something called fiber optics. And you say, well, that sounds a little bit like this stuff I got in the drawer. Mm-hmm. So they send it out to them and say, here, look at this. Maybe this will help you with the research that you're already doing. So the claim wasn't that that we got fiber optics from the Roswell craft or that we got computer chips from the Roswell craft. The claim was that we had objects that might steer our own researchers who are already doing that research in the right direction, right? Might save them some time. And that's basically what his claim was in his book, that he didn't, it wasn't like, we just took this technology and deployed it. It was that we used this technology to help steer research amongst human scientists.
And that book would be The Day After Roswell by Philip Corso. So as our sort of, as we wrap up our primer, I think we should do this periodically. Like, I think we need to sort of do like an abduction, kind of like what started the abduction thing, like do an episode about that. I think we should.
Arnie and Betty.
Yeah. Or like Travis Walton, like do just to get people up to speed. And I think this is instructive and helpful, honestly, for me to just kind of remind, like, just to go like big sort of macro focus and take the 30,000-foot view of what are sort of modern-day Roswell, our modern-day whistleblowers, and just be aware of... Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and remind people that when you hear, oh, that was explained, that think more about it. Was it explained? What was the explanation? And does the explanation make any sense?
Yeah.
Like for example, the Roswell explanation makes no sense. Years later, they tried to up it and say, it was a special weather balloon. It was a mogul weather balloon. It was a top secret weather balloon, which still makes no sense.
There was somebody on record who said to George Knapp that it was some sort of like a Russian experimental plane that crashed. I mean, they can't even get their attempts to debunk are as absurd as far more absurd than just the idea that like we're being checked out by another race, another species.
At one point, I think they tried to claim that it was children mutilated by Nazi experiments dropped from the sky.
Yeah. That's actually an excuse that was put out there. That was that was one of the... which is the terrible.
Children mutilated by Nazis.
Yeah. I don't know what to say about that.
Were dropped from the air.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the goal was.
I don't either. What as projectiles to just like the finishing touch of the torture, that is
that's the other thing George Knapp found out when he was in Russia was that Stalin had ordered people to investigate Roswell. So it definitely wasn't
Because he was spying on it. Because he was spying on it because it was an important nuclear facility.
Yeah. So they wanted to find out what the hell happened to Roswell.
Yeah.
At the time.
These are places to start for those just starting out to be UFO curious, or and is Tic Tac, Philip Corso, Roswell, and up to the 2017 article and even books like this just published. This and one's also called Inside the U.S. Government Covert UFO Program, Initial Revelations. I'm not selling this. I got no stake in this, except it's pretty interesting that the Department of Defense published this book and scrubbed it for a year. And it's still filled with the weirdest shit you can possibly imagine. So,
And it's
not
and
me,
it's
not you.
And it's written by the two people who ran the funded top secret military research. Funded by the U.S. government study of UFOs. Called OSAP.
And our dear friend George Knapp, again, like it's just so cool that he was so generous with his time, and that was just an amazing kind of walk through recent history, and he's such a big part of it.
And people should also watch the News Nation has done a wonderful two-part sort of celebration and exploration of George Knapp as well, which is worth.
Is that a two-parter?
Yeah, yeah,
but not a three-parter. Like
not a three-parter.
Not like really with Tom and Dave, you know, has outdone itself. We've outdone ourselves. Mm-hmm. This is going to be hard to top, but we're going to keep topping it.
Well, I guess we should say, actually, this will air after.
This is going to air after. Yeah, that we are recording at Halloween.
We hope you've already enjoyed. We hope you've already enjoyed George. Because they're being edited as we speak these words.
Oh yeah, they've taken it all in and been amazed and astounded, and this is you know, hopefully we'll get to talk with them again. And our buddy Jeremy, and just to refresh. You just got to it's like refreshing your computer, refresh, get rid of all the noise.
Yeah.
Get rid of all the noise and just take in some of the basic kind of truths here, which is that we are living in some interesting fucking times.
Yeah. This isn't crazy. It isn't fringe. It's just, it's the reality we are already living in. Mm-hmm. Even though only about 2% of the population are aware of it at this point.
Yeah. But so this is the service we provide.
Yeah.
And we're happy to do it. But hey, look, man. Happy Halloween.
Yes. And buy war bonds.
and buy war bonds. Take care of your tummy. Stay away from you know, whatever is going on with you. The viewers should know you've soldiered on through incredible distress, as intestinal distress.
Squiffy tum tum is what I call it. Squiffy tum.
I don't know what that is, but I'll remember it now. Dave Foley, ladies and gentlemen, under great health distress, has been here to give you the truth about.
I have a bit of a glow from it, though. I think
I do. I think you look a little thinner. You can look kind of have a nice, you know,
it
works for you. I don't know what to say. Yeah, you look great. Thanks all. We will we'll see you again at the same bat time, same bat station. Subscribe and like on our YouTube channel at Really with Tom and Dave. Please like and subscribe and send us your comments and all your nice thoughts. And if you have criticisms, keep them constructive.
Or at least clever. At least if you're going to be abusive, be clever about it.
For sure. If we missed something. Yeah. Like let us know.
If Mark Twain wanted to criticize us, I'd go, that's witty.
I'd pay attention. And it has to be done with crisp imagination.
Yeah. Like H.L. Mencken comes back from the grave to mock us.
That would be great. That'd be amazing. That would be a podcast in and of itself. Mm-hmm. All right, buddy.
All right. Good to see you.
Rock and roll. Good to see you, pal.
Good night, everybody.